In 1986, the equivalent of an earthquake hit Fleet Street. Rupert Murdoch had been secretly preparing to move his newspapers to a factory in Wapping, East London, surrounded by guards and razor wire. When he finally made his move, he sacked more than 5,000 people. He said the print unions were obstructing agreement on Manning and new technology. The Thatcher government backed Murdoch with a police operation clearly intended to protect the distribution of the Sun and the other Murdoch papers. No one denies that sections of the unions had at times famously abused their power, but it also suited managements to look the other way.
It should be remembered that Murdoch's great contribution, in my opinion, was not the Sun or the News of the World, but defeating unions who were making it impossible to produce any newspapers of any sort. I forgive him a lot for that.
However, as these documents make clear, the unions had worked hard to negotiate an agreement with Murdoch, which he clearly had no intention of keeping. In this letter, his lawyer proposes the most convenient way of sacking the maximum number of people.
Everything has to come to an end sometime, and we've been waiting for 6 years to get somewhere, and we just can't leave the clock standing still any longer.
In fact, half of those sacked by Murdoch were people like these women, cleaners, secretaries, librarians, long-serving employees who had nothing to do with the dispute. Murdoch claimed his Wapping revolution would bring what he called a new dawn of freedom to the press, a flowering of independent newspapers. In fact, the opposite happened. Of four national newspapers launched in the mid-1980s, only one survives. There is now less diversity and less independence in the British press, while Murdoch's power has never been greater.
From where I sit, it is abundantly clear that Murdoch is engaged in a process of trying to create a de facto newspaper, national newspaper monopoly in Britain, and that the politicians are well aware of it and are not prepared to do anything about it. Murdoch did say, I believe to Sir David English some years ago, that he ultimately believed there would be three surviving newspapers. There'd be the Times, there'd be the Daily Mail, and there'd be the Sun, and that would be by and large it. Now, the price war is his way, in part, of achieving that. It was designed partly to destroy the Independent. It's designed to cripple the Hollinger Group that owned the Telegraph, and then they'll go after the rest. And the reason he can do it is that he has these enormous profits pouring in from satellite television. Everyone that I know in politics and the media understands this. Everyone knows the dangers. And at this stage, at any rate, I have no faith in the politicians doing anything about it. We have
main engine. The move to Wapping allowed Murdoch to cut costs and make massive profits. This gave him his big chance to expand into television. In 1988, he launched Sky TV, which swallowed up its only competitor, BSB. Today, he controls much of the broadcasting of sport and is about to take over the new wave of digital TV, giving him unprecedented power over television. At the root of Murdoch's profits and power is his extraordinary talent for manipulating the tax laws of the countries he operates in. Since 1991, his London-based company, News International, has recorded profits of more than £1 billion, on which it has paid virtually no tax. Murdoch appears to pay little, if any, tax. How does he do it?
Well, he does it because he's an international business. He operates all over the world, America, Australia, England, the Far East. And therefore, he can exploit two things. He can exploit the different tax rates that apply across the world, and he can exploit different accounting provisions that apply across the world. If you take, say, somewhere like Australia, you know, which has corporate tax rates, you know, 20, 30, 40%, depending on the size of your business and what business you're in. Now, one of the things that he does is he ensures that those businesses, although they operate in Australia and they sell newspapers to Australian citizens and they broadcast television programs to Australian citizens, although they operate in Australia, they're owned in a country like the Netherlands Antilles, where tax rates are negligible. and in fact 1%. So that is how he does it.
Is that legal?
It's absolutely legal. This is what large multinationals try to do all of the time. I mean, it's a constant guerrilla war between companies on the one hand and the tax authorities on the other to try to stop this sort of thing happening.
So there are two different tax rules. There's the tax rules for you and me, and there's tax rules for Murdoch.
Yeah, these guys aren't like us. They see it as a challenge to avoid paying any taxes so that they continue to get their businesses to grow. They are a different class of people. These are the overclass. These are the ones who want to rule the world, and they don't want to pay us for the privilege of doing so.
I will devote every breath that I breathe, every sinew of my body, to ensuring that your grandchildren do get to live in that new Britain, in a new and better world.
In 1995, Tony Blair flew to Hayman Island off Australia to meet Rupert Murdoch. The resort was owned by Rupert Murdoch. His first-class fare was paid for by Rupert Murdoch. Blair talked a great deal about morality and the moral challenge facing the British people. He also said he believed that certain laws regulating the media were obsolete. That is the kind of regulation that prevents very powerful men like Rupert Murdoch owning television stations as well as newspapers. The next day, The Sun, owned by Rupert Murdoch, commented, "Mr. Blair has vision, he has purpose, and he speaks our language on morality and family life."
The Labour Party in Britain has abandoned any idea of trying to discipline the Murdoch press. We now have the extraordinary example in which the Conservative Party has brought in regulations to control the expansion of Murdoch, and the Labour Party opposition stand up and say this is a very bad idea. I mean, it's absurd.
It wouldn't be right, as I was just saying, for those who dominate the newspaper audience also to control the dominant established television or radio broadcasting licenses.
This was a debate in Parliament last year about whether media companies like The Mirror and Murdoch's should be allowed to control television as well as newspapers. It wasn't the Tories, but Labour, that made clear that it wanted to give these powerful organisations what they wanted.
Can I just make sure for the record that my views are plain? I do favour competition in the provision of services. I favour full competition, and I therefore see no reason why any player should be arbitrarily excluded from the market. Arbitrarily excluded from the market through introducing such a test as this bill proposes.
What Labour's front bench spokesman, Dr. Lewis Mooney, wants to remove restrictions because, he says, the whole point is to ensure the creation of bigger companies.
I don't want complete deregulation. I do not I've always said that we do not need regulation of cross-media ownership. We need regulation of ownership through an effective Monopolies and Mergers Commission combined with the Office of Fair Trading into a new body.
But the Monopolies and Mergers Commission has a pretty poor track record, doesn't it? We saw Rupert Murdoch create BSkyB as an effective monopoly. So
satellite television was effectively bankrupt when Murdoch decided to put a lot of his company's money into making it a success. He deserves.
Well, he took over the BSB. Contributed to his success.
There are very few visionaries around who are prepared to put their money up and sit back and wait for a long period to get a return on it. That's one of the things that's wrong with investment in this country. Give Murdoch his due. That's exactly what he did, and he deserves the credit for it.
Do you regard Murdoch as a visionary?
Well, I certainly regard him as a visionary in terms of satellite television, yes.
I think that the great demeaning, degrading issue has been, above all, the sort of sexualization of news, where everything becomes sex-obsessed, sex-orientated, and gossip, and does nothing else. You know, there's no proper discussion about politics, economics, the social construction of the country. All of those things are deemed to be boring and tedious. That has been the big problem, and that is something that broadsheet newspapers have an absolute duty to fight.